I changed the logo. Movie Buff Specialist Phil and John are back, and we are continuing our way through phase three now of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're talking about Doctor Strange tonight, and we are talking about the largest opening in Blumhouse history, Five Nights at Freddy's. This is a movie that a whole bunch of people have seen. Corwin Green making us feel relevant tonight. A movie I'm actually pretty fond of, and the latest movie I've seen that I hated because it really filled me with nothingness. This should be a good discussion. You know, it's crazy, John, because when we did our top 100, we tried to focus on these movies that we love, and you made us watch a whole bunch of Russian stuff, and I would watch, you know, Barcelona, and I had us do Last Days of Disco, these Whit Stillman movies that nobody's seen. And I always said that when I sit down and I want to watch a movie, the whole point is to enjoy the movie. If I know I'm not going to like something, I don't go to see it. And that's why I stayed away from the Marvel movies for so long, because I knew they really weren't my cup of tea. And that's why I stay away from a lot of Netflix originals and certain things, because I've been burned enough by them. And this series has really ruined that mantra for me, because I knew I wasn't going to like Five Nights at Freddy's, and yet I went in and watched it anyway. And the saddest part is, out of all the movies we've done, with the exception of Barbie and Oppenheimer, which we did all the way back in July, this is the one that the most people are going to have seen. And that makes me really, really sad.
It's so sad when you phrase it that way. Like, I didn't even thought about that. Wow, that's actually really depressing.
Mm-hmm. I'm here to depress. That's what I do.
Yeah. Especially coming off of a week where we just talked about, you know, the latest Scorsese film. Here we are talking Five Nights at Freddy's, which may be the worst movie I've ever seen in theaters.
I wouldn't go that far. I have seen, I did see Lady in the Water in theaters.
Oh, I did see that in theaters too.
That was a terrible movie. That was not a good movie. I don't really know any other words to say that it sucked. It was one of the worst movies ever. But I did not enjoy this. And here's my problem. And it was funny because my review on Letterboxd was not meant to be comical. It was really how I felt. It was, this movie was fine until the thing started to do stuff, and then it was dumb. The whole buildup is, here come the animatronics. They're evil. They're going to do stuff. And then they really don't do anything. They're tickling her, and they're like friends with her, and they're not really evil, and they're being controlled somehow. And it is so half-assedly thrown together, and it's frustrating. And look, Willy's Wonderland, I have like a newfound respect for, because Willy's Wonderland had no budget. This is a movie I worked at the company that was doing Willy's Wonderland, and the budget was tough, and they had Nicolas Cage, and you know, you didn't have Blumhouse behind it. Yeah. And when I sit there and I watch this movie, they had so much going for them. And Josh Hutcherson does great in this. I actually really like Josh Hutcherson in this movie. I think he was given nothing to work with, but I actually think he acts fine. I didn't actually know that he had any ability to act, so I thought he was fine in this movie. But there's nothing fun about this movie. That's the craziest part. Like, when I think about Willy's Wonderland, even when it didn't hit, when Nick Cage goes and just wants to play pinball and wants to drink his soda and doesn't talk the entire movie, it's winking at you the whole time, even if the winks aren't always being noticed. Or even if they're so stupid, it's not working. I didn't feel that at all in this movie. I wasn't scared. I wasn't laughing. And it made a whole bunch of money because it's based on a video game series that has done very, very well. But this did not, I mean, this was, I didn't mind the story. I didn't mind the story. I didn't mind the story. I actually thought it was a pretty good buildup. I couldn't believe John gave it one star. And then she goes into the thing with him, and I'm like, oh my God, they couldn't have made more wrong decisions if they wanted to.
Yeah, I think what this movie really came down to is it's hard. I think we've kind of been spoiled with video game adaptations recently. With like the Sonic movies, which have like really kind of like turned the table on video game adaptations. And I think we've just forgotten video game adaptations are really hard to make well.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know I was in the minority, and I really disliked the Super Mario movie that came out this year, but this movie had so many winks and nods to people who knew the story and knew everything about Five Nights at Freddy's already that it was impossible to watch coming in as someone new to the franchise. And that's when you do that to a movie, you're just alienating most of your audience, right? Especially when you have a movie that is targeted to children, and we know it's targeted to children because it's a PG-13 movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, uh-huh. They could have made this a rated R movie if they wanted to. They knew they had to target it to children to get people to watch it. And because of that, they decided to cater it too much to children so that anybody just walking in, any parent taking their kid to this movie, can't even enjoy it because there's nothing to tell them anything about this world.
Yeah. Corwin again says, I feel like what separates this movie from other bad movies is that it's just so mid. I hate Gen Z talk, but this movie is aggressively mid versus like I can find hidden joy in bad movies. And I think that's great. And mm-hmm. Valiers here says, Willy's Wonderland was way effing better. And I mean, I agree. Yeah. And I just want to also shout out that Valiers said, hey, you guys made me see Haunting in Venice. So it's not all depressing. Yeah, that's good. But I totally agree. I did not feel like they were having as much fun with this as they were supposed to. There were no scares in this movie. The part where all of the no-name bad guys go into the place and get killed by the animatronics, that was supposed to be the build-up to something, and instead it was just the only scary. It's not scary, but it's the only like shocking part of it. And all of it was in the trailer.
Well, it's a Blumhouse movie. And when we talked about The Exorcist Believer, I went on my Blumhouse rant. Blumhouse, Jason Blum, has a philosophy that you can show all the best parts of the movie in a trailer because audiences are stupid and will forget them by the time they see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this movie was advertised so much, it was another one of those movies you saw the trailer for before every single thing you saw.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of knew all the high points of the movie going into it because it's a Blumhouse movie.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I wasn't expecting much from this. Like I said, I knew I wasn't going to like this movie. But be fun. And I just didn't feel like it was fun. And, you know, the thing is, it's the bummer of the situation. Blumhouse can make really good movies. Blumhouse can make some excellent movies. But
Blumhouse is popular because they've made excellent movies.
Yeah, because they did what? Get Out, and they even produced Whiplash and Black Klansman. Mm-hmm. Like, they've made some absolutely incredible movies. Even The Invisible Man, Us.
Yeah, that was
really good movies.
Yeah.
Split was pretty good. I think it gets a little corny, but it's pretty good. They did The Purge. I mean, they're good. And I feel like what ends up happening is they get to a point where they say, let's just keep making money. And they don't even take pride in what they make anymore. And it ruins your brand. But, you know, we rip Disney all the time in terms of the decisions they made in the 20 teens and stuff like that. They've just made, they've oversaturated the market so much. Blumhouse has officially oversaturated the market with bad horror movies that they know are going to make money. And you're going to look back on this era of Blumhouse movies the same way we look back on 90s raunchy comedies. And I'm not talking American Pie. I'm talking the ones that are like Ernest Does Whatever. And, you know, when you go back to the Weekend at Bernie's era of things, Weekend at Bernie's is a classic with air quotes. But when you go back and watch those movies now, there's nothing to them. And I think that's where we've hit now with Blumhouse. They're going to make a whole bunch of money, and maybe that'll mean that they'll put that towards a good movie at some point. But right now, this was so embarrassingly bad, and it makes me wonder, do they just not take pride in the work they're putting out anymore? Have they made it so much that they're numb to it, and they say, let's just put it out and make money so we can keep living the lives we're living? Good for Jason Blum. I mean, I can't argue it. He made a hell of a career for himself. But this mm-hmm. is so lazy and stupid.
It feels like this is the type of movie that just didn't have an editor attached to it. Because there are so many things I come out of this movie asking, but why? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a sense of like a suspension of disbelief you need to have in horror movies, right? We're dealing with ghosts here. Like, you have to be able to suspend some things, but I don't think I've come out of a movie with as many questions as I had this one, because there's just like no, I wouldn't say there's no explanation, but the explanation given isn't sufficient enough to justify anything that happens in the movie. And I think like one of the biggest things is this like cartoon villain aunt in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, she's there and she wants to take Josh Hutcherson's sister away for the money, but she's willing to pay people $1,000 to be able to do that. So money's not really an issue for her. And, you know, that money also goes to taking care of the children. So unless she's like so cartoon villain that she is really doing this for like child support money, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make sense. There's no motivation. And I've complained about a lack of motivations a lot when discussing movies. There's nothing to any of the motivations to any of these characters in this movie, in my opinion. Nothing.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that this goes back to the fact that this is a PG-13 movie. Now, when I was going into this, I didn't realize it was PG-13. Paranormal Activity, I believe, is a PG-13 movie, if I'm not mistaken, because they kind of got
away with it. There's no blood. There's no...
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And that's kind of what Blumhouse did, was Blumhouse started off with these PG-13 movies, got into it, then started doing... they did Sinister and Insidious, right? They did both of them?
I believe so.
So what gets me with this is you could really feel the PG-13-ness with this ant character, because this ant character is there's a comment, an offhand comment from Abby about how she smells like cigarettes. Then smoke the damn cigarettes. Why is she not smoking cigarettes? Why is she not drinking? Why is she not treating people like shit? Why is that not happening? Because it's a PG-13 movie and they can't get away with it. There could be so much more to this character if they were willing to go off the rails with it. And that's where, again, like, you can have, I think Valier says, I think Insidious is PG-13, though. Okay, maybe it is. Yep. You can have great PG-13 movies. Christopher Nolan makes nothing but PG-13 movies until he made Oppenheimer. And his movies make a whole bunch of money, but they always had some sort of thought to them, even if Tenet made absolutely zero sense. There was something going on there. And the PG-13 never got in the way of the artistic sense of the movie. And I feel like Five Nights at Freddy's, it did. And you're talking about things that just didn't make sense. That this guy can for some reason possess them, and they're getting in the car with a bunny animatronic thing, and there's kids in the bodies, and nobody smelled the decaying bodies, and I guess the bodies weren't decaying, and I don't understand anything that happens in the final 45 minutes of that movie. There's a part where I think somebody says, "What the hell is going on?" And that's the only thing I was thinking.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You bring up the bodies, like this idea of like that the cops search Freddy's. So first off, there's enough motivation. Like, and then this is when we get into like a lot of the plot problems with this movie and a lot of the like the script problems with this. So there's this investigation into the owner of Freddy's, enough that they like shut the place down because like there's missing kids. First off, the first place I would check if I was a police officer would be the animatronics. That is literally the first place I would ever check. Secondly, like you said, decaying bodies smell bad. And if they're like in these animatronics, they're going to make a smell. Like, it's going to be pretty obvious they're there. The other thing, Josh Hutcherson's brother goes missing and he doesn't know about this case where somebody like was investigated as the prime suspect, and he has no idea what this place is when it was shut down because of that exact instance. Like,
during the exact
none of these things make sense.
Yeah.
None of them make sense. And again, I've talked to friends who like are much deeper into the lore based on these video games. They're like, no, it makes sense from a lore perspective, but it doesn't. Because if this is the lore perspective of this game, it's a poorly written video game.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I was very confused why he was so unaware of everything that was going on when it was at this exact same time period, and you think that news would have traveled because he hasn't moved from where Freddy's was, right? Like, it seems like his whole life is still in this one area. And I also, I wasn't really sold on any of the whole, like, his guilt of he didn't watch his brother and somehow the car came and took the brother away while the parents were 3 feet away and just didn't turn their heads to the left and say, hey, kid, don't get in that car. It was just, like, nonsense. And, you know, I don't understand why so much of this movie took place in the woods and so little of it took place in Freddy's.
It didn't take place in the woods. It took place in Josh Hutcherson's head. It took place in his dreams. Like, the majority of this movie is taking place in some world that can't be interacted by anything, but for some reason is because there are ghost children. Mm-hmm. Again, it makes no sense. There's so much emphasis put into it of, like, this, like, mystery that needs to be solved, but it's never solved. It just kind of falls into his lap at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I watched it and I thought that it was going to be okay based on how it opened. And then the longer it went on, the more I said, wow, was this the first draft? Did they just need to rush mm-hmm. this along because of the writer's strike? Like, I don't know. I really don't know. But man, it got to the point where when the taxi driver has the animatronic get in the car and it's not even questioned.
Not even questioned.
What am I watching?
It's not even the animatronic getting in the car. Like, 8-year-old girl gets into the car alone and you don't question it.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick Stahl says, I don't think y'all are the audience for this movie. I don't necessarily agree with that. I really like campy, corny horror movies. Like, I like over-stylized horror. I like movies like Willy's Wonderland. I think I gave 1 star too, but I like movies that take place in weird settings with weird things going on. You know, I thought Ready or Not was a great movie, and I know it's not animatronics, but it's literally a game of hide and seek. And this movie could have been a movie that I would watch for sure. But like Corwin Green says, probably not, but the movie could have done better to ramp people who aren't Five Nights at Freddy's fans into this film. And that's what I thought. Unless you were a Five Nights at Freddy's fan, I don't think you liked this movie.
Yeah. And I mean, like, because you can't say we don't like these bad horror movies, because I literally just spent an entire month watching a combination of good and bad horror movies. And I enjoyed it all. I watched some awful horror movies this month. Mm-hmm. I watched something called Trick or Treat, which might be one of the Trick or Treats from like 1980, which is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I still had fun watching it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not sitting there being like, oh my God, I can't wait for this to be over. And that's how I felt with this movie, is I just felt like, okay, is something going to happen? Because the pacing was all off, because there's no ramp up. There's no, you don't get these, like, this paranoia, because we spend so much time in this dream world. We don't get this, like, paranoia of Josh Hutcherson's character in Freddy's, right? Like, we don't get this idea of, like, oh my God, the animatronics are moving, because all of a sudden there's just this cop here who knows that all the animatronics are moving and stuff. And that is totally fine. Like, they build in this in-universe explanation for the animatronics to be, like, roaming with this proprietary technology that they talk about in the security video. And then they do nothing with it.
Mm-hmm. That's, and again, my biggest complaint with this movie isn't even so much the plot. I thought the plot devolved into nonsense at the end. But if you're going to devolve into nonsense, have fun while you're doing it. And I just don't feel mm-hmm. like it had fun while it was doing it. I don't think that there weren't enough fun, different moments with the animatronics. There was there was the one moment where the nameless bad guys come in and the animatronics kill them. And then we see the animatronics giggling with the girls. Now there's no real drama involved with these animatronics. Mm-hmm. And then they weren't having fun with it. And maybe it was because it was PG-13, so they couldn't go into the different ways to kill people or anything like that. But if you watch this, I almost treat this movie like a slasher movie. Somebody needs to die. Something needs to happen. More than just one scene of that. And yeah, I just feel like they dropped the ball on that. If it was fun, if there were more deaths, if the deaths seemed to make sense with what the characters were doing and what the animatronics were built for, I would have been about it, but I wanted, like, when I was watching the beginning of this movie, I was ready to give this literally three stars until she said, "They're tickling me." And once she said, "They're tickling me," I said, "Wait a second. Is this a horror movie?" Because if it's not a horror movie, which it clearly, in my opinion, it clearly isn't a horror movie. If it's not a horror movie, then really what is it? Because it's not really a thriller either. And the five nights that he's spending at Freddy's, the first three, nothing happens. Really, the first four, nothing happens.
I think, I almost feel like the five night structure is a detriment to this film. And I mean, we keep making these comparisons to Willy's Wonderland, but I think like it's important to do that because we've had such a similar themed movie come out so recently. I think what makes Willy's Wonderland a more fun ride is that it does take place over a single night. Because in a single night, you can have those escalations and deaths and things like that. While over five nights, it gets harder and harder to write excuses for red shirts to be introduced to the movie. We have these four red shirt characters introduced, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Like, these characters make no sense. We're learning that the aunt is, like, paying this babysitter to get dirt on her nephew so that she can take her niece. And the babysitter seems to be the, like, a caring and compassionate character. And then all of a sudden, they get the most horrific death in the entire movie?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. She gets bit in half. But it's all shadows because, again, they can't do it. I don't know. I really don't. I think that we don't need to keep talking about it, but I want to throw these two comments up. Patrick Stahl said, "I think it's Wikia stuff, though I also haven't seen the movie. I just know that my brother quite liked it, and he's mostly just read the lore without even having played the game." I mean, maybe having a little bit more knowledge about it would have worked in my favor. And then Corwin says, "I'd say nothing happening for basically the first two nights is pretty standard to the game, but I don't think it translated well here." I think that's the biggest problem with video game adaptations, because I love Ratchet and Clank, the video game, but the movie is horrible. I actually liked the Uncharted video game, but I also watched it on a plane when I had like nothing else going on, and I hate flying. So just being able to watch something that takes my mind off of flying was good. I love the video game. I'm trying to think, like, you know, we don't generally ever get good video game adaptations because the point of a video game is you are doing something. Even if you're doing the most menial things, you're doing something. I always think about Final Fantasy X, which is probably my favorite video game of all time. I sit down, I play Final Fantasy X. For the first 2 hours, Titus is narrating the story to you. And you don't really do much. And then, like, you'll get control of the character and you swim a couple feet. And then there's another cutscene. Like, it's crazy how long the story is built up. But I love the story and I'm really into it. But if you tried to make that into a movie, you have to figure out where the fun, exciting, important parts are, but also manage to keep the story going because you don't have 40 hours to tell the story now. And I feel like that's what a lot of video game adaptations struggle with is they have good stories. Last of Us has a very good story. That almost was too long on TV. Being 10 episodes, it didn't need to be so many episodes. It could have been shorter. That could have been a movie. But then there's others that maybe do need to be a TV show. Maybe Five Nights at Freddy's would have been better if it was a TV show. And if the first five episodes were talking about the kids and what happened. I never played the game. So I don't know if that would totally defeat the purpose.
Do you know what the like premise of the game is?
You're a security guard who's at Freddy's?
Yeah. But like the gameplay is you're like looking at these monitors and trying to catch these things moving so that they don't kill you. Is my understanding of it. I've never personally played the game, but that's how it's been described to me. And that's why, like, once you get into the security room, there are all these, like, Easter eggs in that room. And for us laymans who just have no idea anything about this lore or anything like that, we don't get it. It all goes over our head. So these little moments that are really connecting with the people who know the games and just know the lore in general, it connects to them in a way that like it can't connect to us because it's not built up. But they aren't like Easter eggs. They're just blatantly put there. I'm thinking like the bobblehead, right? like that bobblehead's there. It's like literally he opens the locker and there's a bobblehead there. And like, I guess this is our reference to the game. And I shouldn't be thinking that as an audience member when I'm seeing a movie.
I agree. And Corwin says that's the premise. The gameplay is you're stuck in a single room and try to manage resources to keep them out of the security room.
I know it has a very full and a very well-developed lore to it that people love. But I think you also have to look at who the target audience is and what you're trying to do. The target, I know from working in like a retail store that had like Five Nights at Freddy's, like pop heads and stuff, right? Like this is a franchise that kids play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down and that first kill happens with that first security guard. A mother takes her son out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if that, like you have literally just, this mother will probably never let her kid play these games again.
But they got the money.
They did. They got tons of money. But I mean, like, I don't remember the last time I went to a movie and there were more children in the audience than there were adults.
Mm-hmm.
But I did with this one.
Well, we don't have good things to say about Five Nights at Freddy's, people.
We'll end on a positive note.
Go ahead.
The animatronics in this movie did look great.
They did.
Practical, because they used practical effects for it. They looked great. And I heard that like it actually got very dangerous because they decided to go the practical route with this because everything was really flammable.
Mm.
But I'm glad they did that because it did give it a little more authenticity and it felt a lot better because of it. I just wish they did more with it. I wish we saw more from these characters. I wish there was more build of these characters. We didn't even talk about Vanessa, the cop, who is probably one of the worst characters in this entire movie.
Yeah, don't like her at all. Didn't want to be mean, but don't like her at all.
Like,
terrible.
There's just so many. There's just, as a logical person, you see the way these people are acting, and it makes no sense. Why is this cop who knows that these are the ghost children in these machines not doing something about it? And then, like, you obviously, like, full spoiler for the movie at this point. You obviously get the reveal that her dad was the killer. It was pretty obvious. You could piece it together incredibly early in the movie. And then, you know, her dad's exactly who you think it is. And again, apparently a bunch of his dialogue is just like shout outs to the game and things that make it like are just this fan service that's happening. And it ruins it. I'm sitting there and I am giving full spoilers to this movie because, like, if you made it this far into this podcast after we've been talking about this, you don't care to see this movie. When Matthew Lillard shows up at this villain at the very end of this movie, which you kind of assume because Matthew Lillard's in this movie and you don't think he's just in one scene.
Yeah.
Because that wouldn't make sense for the biggest name person in this movie. But I'm sitting there as a horror fan. And I'm like, I just wish they dropped a TV on his head.
Yeah.
You know, give us like a nod to Scream.
Give us
like,
something for the like an old school. Yeah.
Give us something because the movies just didn't have it. I honestly, if they had dropped a TV on Matthew Lillard's head, probably would have given this 1.5 stars.
That's all it would have taken.
Like that's all it would have taken because there were parts of this movie that I saw potential in and it just, they weren't met.
Yeah.
And
Don't go too far, John. You said you're ending on a positive.
I know, but I can't because there's too many negatives. There's one more that I really want to talk about. When does this movie take place?
The 2000.
Did it say that? Did it say the year that it takes place?
There is one part where it says 2000, and I can't remember what it is, and I was shocked too, but there is one moment where it shows the year 2000.
Because I missed that. And
yeah, there was one part.
I have been struggling so hard with the math on how old these characters are with when Freddy's closed since then, trying to figure out what year this movie takes place.
That makes me laugh. Yeah, it definitely says 2000 at one point.
Oh, good. Good. Okay, cool. I'm glad that's established and that it's just me being dumb and missing it. But let me tell you, when you miss that, you do a lot of math to figure out how old Josh Hutcherson would have been in the 80s when he was 12 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes a lot more sense when you know, but it was 2000.
Cool.
So you know what, John? You didn't like this movie because you're a lazy viewer.
Apparently I am. But this movie's been greenlit for two more sequels. It's made a lot of money and it got really poor reviews. I don't know if Blum cares about that at all.
But I mean, like, they made The Nun and The Nun 2.
The critic reviews for this movie are very bad.
Yeah, they don't care though. It's The Nun and The Nun 2. No. They're going to make a bunch of money.
Yeah. So it would be nice to see what they do now that they don't have to deal with this backstory of like Josh Hutcherson character's brother that disappeared and stuff. It'd be interesting to see how they handle a sequel to this. But I doubt I'll see it.
Yeah. No, unless we're still doing this podcast. All right, we're going to move on. First, I'm going to throw up this. Jordan says he saw an early access screening of The Holdovers. It's great. And Dominic Sessa is going to be an absolute star. Patrick Stahl, when you had said that maybe this movie just wasn't for us, The Holdovers definitely is for me. So you're right. Yes, I mean, I'm not really ripping Patrick here. I mean, I'm more saying like, I feel like I can almost make any movie feel like it's for me. Obviously there's going to be some movies that aren't. I wasn't going to go see Inspector Son or whatever that animated movie was that came out. That's certainly for children. And there's going to be chick flicks that I'm not going to care about. And there's going to be just movies, whatever. Like I hate Love Actually, but guess what? Love Actually really isn't for me. So I get that, but I'm excited for The Holdovers. We'll be doing that at some point in the future. But now we're going to jump over to Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange.
Speaking of horror directors.
Yeah. So I want to get my thoughts out about Doctor Strange first. And I talked about this on last week's podcast. So if you haven't listened to that, you don't need to because I'm about to tell you anyway. With Doctor Strange, this was one where when they first released this trailer was great. And anybody who has seen the Marvels trailer, that's a bad trailer. That is if you don't know what a bad trailer is, just Google the Marvels trailer. That is one of the worst trailers I've ever seen in my entire life. And Doctor Strange's trailer was insane. 2016, you have to remember, like we're coming off, Inception is now 6 years old.
Interstellar out already at this point.
Interstellar was 2 years old. So you're sitting there and you're saying, wow, this looks awesome. I will tell you now that caught my attention. And I had sworn off the Marvel movies. And I was like, I am not watching this movie. But watching the movie this time, this was the first time where I said, while watching a Marvel movie, I like the story. But the CGI has literally made this one of the worst movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe that I've seen up to this point. I could not stand the CGI in this movie. I felt like they were like, did you know that we have $250 million to make this movie? Well, here it is. And it was just, let's move everything as much as we possibly can to the point where I was just, it was meant to be like beautiful looking, but I felt like I was just looking at nonsense the entire movie. And it was so blatantly a green screen the whole time, which obviously it's a green screen. I'm not going to be an idiot and be like, oh, practical effects. But at the same time, we do know people who have done that with practical effects. Nolan did a lot with practical effects. What do you call it? Kubrick did a bunch with practical effects. This could have had more practical effects. And it felt like it just wanted me to almost feel like I was looking into a kaleidoscope for 2.5 hours. It needed to chill with the special effects so bad. There is so much bad CGI in this movie. It drove me nuts because I actually kind of liked the story. And, you know, there's little superhero things that you want to roll your eyes at. But I liked the story enough. It just was relentless.
It is. And it's to the point where a lot of the CGI feels like it doesn't need to be CGI. Not because, like, of effects or anything like that. Like, Doctor Strange's cape is CGI for most of this movie.
Yeah. Like, why?
Like, it's those little things that's just like, okay, this is unnecessary. You're just doing CGI for the sake of CGI now. Maybe you want this cape to flow in the wind. Do you just, like, get a fan?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. What did you give it? How many stars did you give it?
2.5. which is lower than the last time I watched this, because I did rewatch this movie before the latest Doctor Strange movie came out. And I was like, no, this is a 3-star. But I this time the CGI really got to me. Because I do think, like, overall, the acting and the story, this is kind of a 3-star Marvel movie to me. It definitely lands on the higher end of things for me. But the CGI was really distracting this time.
Yeah. It was distracting to the point where I really don't even understand necessarily what the story was becoming. Like, I started to lose the story so much. And I like Mads Mikkelsen, but his villain was just not... He didn't do anything for me in this movie at all.
Mads Mikkelsen has this, like, terrible habit of being wasted by Disney in projects. Mm-hmm. He was wasted in Rogue One. He's wasted in this movie. I mean... We've talked about The Hunt on the podcast before and how fantastic Mads Mikkelsen is in that. We talked about Another Round when we were doing that Oscar preview. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Mads Mikkelsen, if you really want a showcase of what Mads Mikkelsen can do, you have to watch Hannibal. Mm-hmm. And when you see Hannibal, well, I'll put it this way. Mads Mikkelsen is a better Hannibal Lecter than Anthony Hopkins.
That's a bold statement.
That is a bold statement, and it is I 100% stand behind it. Mads mm-hmm. Mikkelsen is a better Hannibal Lecter than Anthony Hopkins. And when you watch that show, you see what Mads Mikkelsen is really capable of. Mm-hmm. And he has this imposing, threatening side, but he also has this very sheltering and mentor-y side and this welcoming side. And that balance is what makes Mads Mikkelsen such a great actor. You don't get that in here. You don't get either side in this movie for some reason, because his character is almost non-existent, because he's not actually the villain of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not, because that's where this one gets a little bogged down too, is we have the Tilda Swinton character for a lot of it, and then she ends up being a fraud or whatever it is in her own way. And she's the one who's fighting with him at the beginning of the movie, but then we don't really trust her. So then why do we hate him as much? This is the definition of Marvel just using its budget to say, be distracted. Don't pay too much attention. And I think it really gets in the way of a lot of what's going on here. I mean, I think Benedict Cumberbatch is really good as Doctor Strange. I think Rachel McAdams is solid. Chiwetel Ejiofor is great. Like, you know, Tilda Swinton, as weird as she is, like, she plays the role good. But I feel like it just gets so oversaturated that I watched this movie about a week ago. And I actually kind of have a hard time telling you what the story of the movie is beyond the fact that he gets in the car accident and his hands gets disabled, he's a doctor, and then he goes and he finds these people who, like, teach him how to use his mind in a different way.
No, that is the entire plot of the movie.
But I struggle to figure out, okay, now who's the villain? What's the problem? What's moving forward? I really have a hard time with telling you what happens in the last hour and a half of this movie, because I feel like it was just like, look at these buildings that are moving in this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. And I say to myself, well, I did see a lot about this. I already saw a lot of this in Inception and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is the mainstream stuff. And I mean, you have to look at this movie. Look at how many Academy nominated actors are in this movie. The cast for this movie is ridiculous and will pull people in. The director of this movie is the same person who directed Sinister, one of the scariest movies of all time.
Yeah.
And you have this, like, basic Marvel plot where you have unlikable protagonist number like 87 in the MCU so far. And, you know, he's a dick and he has to learn his lesson. And he kind of does eventually, but it takes the majority of the movie. And then it cuts directly into the third act action sequence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Patrick says, have you talked about how unlikable the protagonist is yet? John, you were just kind of getting there a little bit. I really feel like the Doctor Strange character was too similar to Iron Man.
Yeah, he's too similar to Tony Stark at the beginning.
Yeah. He is, because he's so cocky. He's good at stuff. He's better than everybody else, whatever. It's kind of surprised that Michael Stuhlbarg doesn't really do anything in this movie to, like, get back at him. Yeah. I felt like that was coming. But I do feel like they leaned in too hard to try to make this more of an Iron Man-type character. And I do struggle to figure out what did he really learn about himself throughout the story here.
I think the problem is, it comes down to, I think it's fine having this, like, dickish character, like, who gets his comeuppance and stuff, and, like, has, but I don't think we ever saw him hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. I don't think it went far enough with him going, like, to the aspiration. It's implied, I used my last dollar to get here, one-way ticket, right? And we see, like, his apartment with, like, all of his stuff not there anymore. Like, there are hints as to how desperate he's getting, but we don't spend enough time with the character in that desperation. That first act could have been stretched out a lot longer, and we could cut down the second act, which is focusing, like, a lot on him learning magic. Mm-hmm. We cut down on that, you add a little more character stuff. I think this character becomes incredibly likable, but the problem is, we just don't get enough time with him, which is weird to say in a movie that's 2 hours long. We just don't get enough time for this character to redeem himself.
Yeah, and Corwin says, but he still had that apartment, so, like, how rock bottom was he really? Now, Corwin, I could get into so many nitpicks, but I just chalk it up to superhero movie, don't overthink it, not worried about it, not necessary. But, I mean, the fact that he got in a car accident where his car just smashed off a cliff and all he hurt was his hands – that's a good one. I also like that he keeps being allowed to go into surgery all those times to like save people and everything. Like, he just keeps going into a hospital, no problem. And nobody's questioning him, even though he's walking around in the hallways dressed the way he is. But I'm not worried about that kind of stuff because it's a superhero movie. That's going to happen. You're not going to make
this movie we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. You're not going to make a perfect thing from that in terms of logic, but it starts to become even hard to understand the logic. I think about the end of that movie and Corwin says with the big bad where he's just hard to look at. When I get to the end of that movie, I really have a hard time with that being the climax of the movie. I really struggled with him just constantly doing it over and over and over and over again, because time isn't a thing for him, but time is a thing for Dr. Strange. So he just keeps coming back and the guy has to keep living it and all that. I don't really understand enough about the big bad to be concerned with him as a big bad.
Yeah. And part of that, I think, is the design. And they took away the goofy design of Dormammu, which in the comics is a guy in a suit with a flaming head. But man, that design is so much better than this. But I think one of the important things with this villain, do you know who voices the villain?
No.
It's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, that's funny.
So the entire point is that we're supposed to see this, like, turning point in Doctor Strange and, like, what he could possibly become. And, like, what the decisions that he's making is he could become this great evil or he could kind of save the world. But it doesn't come across because nobody knows that he's Benedict Cumberbatch voicing the character.
Yeah, you can't tell at all. He's too hidden. Now, did they do this because of Smaug?
I don't know.
Right? He had done Smaug by now, right? Smaug,
yeah, whatever. That was 2013, I think, that movie came out.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
I mean, he's a good voice actor. He hides his voice well.
Yeah. The fact that you could, like, his American accent is quite passable in this movie. Like, he can do voices and everything. But the point is, like, it had to be more clear. Either you design the villain to look more like Strange, or, like, if you want that impact of this dichotomy in between, the choices he's making, it also kind of fits with, like, the timey-wimey bit of this movie, too, right? With having, like, the Ancient One and Dormammu as, like, two antitheses to each other, despite the fact that the Ancient One is pulling on Dormammu's powers in order to, you know, live forever.
Yeah, and So when I watched this too, and again, I'm probably way overthinking it, but I had this question the last time, so I kind of want to dive into this a little bit instead of starting to talk about the Ancient One and whatever that means, because it's 11:48 at night and I just can't do it. But it's not you, John, it's me. And it's one of those things where once you start saying things like that,
I have stuff to talk about the Ancient One later, don't worry.
But why does Doctor Strange come into this now? Like, let's talk about that in the grand scheme of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Why does Doctor Strange come in after Captain America Civil War, before Guardians of the Galaxy 2? What is the need to bring him in now and do a full-blown origin story for him?
Without spoilers, the time...
I know the snap thing. You can talk about that. That's not a big deal.
I mean, actually, like, even with spoilers, it's the time stone. The time stone is the most important part of this.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah. Doctor Strange does become, like, quite pivotal once we do get later into Phase 3 and into Phase 4. Oh, no, actually, technically, it's just later in Phase 3. He hasn't appeared in a Phase 4 movie. Oh, no, he did have his own Phase 4 movie. Never mind. I forgot that movie existed. He
literally just
I did reference it earlier, but I forgot it existed again. But... yeah, I mean, there's some relevance to it. There's this also this idea that Marvel wants to kind of start introducing this mystic side of, like, the mysticism of their universe a lot, because they've been so focused on the science side of it all. Mm-hmm. And he's an interesting character. But, like, Patrick Stahl says here, he's a different character after this movie, and we're going to see that the next time he pops up. Like, he feels different. He feels more mature. And this movie, if you look at the official Marvel timeline, this movie happens after Civil War. Mm-hmm. This feels like a movie that happened long before Civil War.
That's why I was asking. So they make mention of the Avengers and things like that in this movie. And now anybody who's listening, and what I kind of find fun about this is we're almost doing that Gilmore Guys thing, where those people sat down and, like, the one guy had never seen a single episode and the other person had watched every season and they podcasted.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel with this. And that's why I ask these questions, because I'm coming at this from somebody who does not care about the Marvel Cinematic Universe really at all. Like, this has not been integral to my life in any way, shape, or form. I ignore it when they would come out. My friends would go see the movies and I'd be like, yeah, I'll see you guys after. I'll get dinner with you before or after or whatever, but I'm not going to go see it because I don't care. And so when I sit down and I watch this, I felt like this movie was an earlier movie in this series, even though it wasn't, it felt that way to me. And so that's why I was asking it, why did it come here? And part of my reason for asking that question was, did it come at this moment because this is when it was necessary to do the story? Or did it come at this moment because they really wanted to wait until they could rack up a monster budget and they have the special effects that are going to look good? The special effects look fine when they're on screen in this movie. It's just there are so many CGI moments. It just becomes nonsensical to me.
Yeah, I think that's really what comes out. But, like, this is the same question you had about why does Phase 2 end with Ant-Man?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't think end of Phase... like I said, end of Phase 1 makes total sense. End of Phase 2 makes absolutely zero sense as to why it happens at that point. And it kind of feels like Phase 2 just ends there because Civil War introduces so many new characters, and we're just getting introduced to more and more characters as we go on from here. But I don't know. Like, it's just as far as Marvel planned ahead. I don't have an answer, but this movie doesn't need to be in this particular spot, and that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah, I don't know. Patrick says they had to gradually bring in all the different kinds of Strange. Maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
fair. Yeah,
that's fair. It's a cool idea. I like the idea where they start playing with time and, you know, like quantum physics, whatever they're actually playing with. Come on, give me a break. Whatever they're
literal
playing
time. With, literal yeah. time.
Yeah, they're playing with it. You see yourself from a different perspective. He's floating through cities and stuff. It's a cool idea. I really do think it is. It's just I didn't love the execution, because you know what this almost reminded me of? And so here, I'll flip it back to a good movie. I'm one of, I think John, maybe one of John's top 100, but I'll flip it back to a good movie. Cause this is where my, this is what my thinking is. The Lobster. Yorgos is about to be very topical coming up because Poor Things is coming out. Emma Stone's the favorite to win the Oscar for that. That's a movie that's, you know, up there right now with Killers of the Flower Moon and other movies, Oppenheimer, whatever. But it reminds me of that where the premise is so good. Why did you abandon it? And that's right. How I felt with The Lobster, right? It's all about the hotel. And all of a sudden they're not in the hotel anymore. And I say, why did you abandon the hotel? I felt like that with Doctor Strange, where it's such a cool idea to be doing the time stuff and everything like that. But then I feel like they almost abandon that just to go so heavy on the CGI. A lot of what's happening in the later part of this almost feels like what they should have just done in Ant-Man when Ant-Man is traveling through a space that does not have any limits.
Right.
And it's okay. We just saw that in Ant-Man. That was two movies ago in this universe. That's it. So why are we seeing something so similar right away when there's so much more you can build in this world? This movie, you were talking about Act One, everything like that. This could have had a very Batman Begins kind of feel to it, mm-hmm. where he's learning this, how to do all this, but he has to have his massive downfall first. He has to have everything go wrong. And we need to see him really lose everything, not fake lose everything. And then the buildup, but they almost wanted to have too many villains and things like that. So when the twist comes in that Tilda Swinton isn't as pure as you think she is, and then Mads Mikkelsen's character is what he is, and then you have the big bad, they don't feel like they land as much as they could have had they not abandoned the plot. I always think of with Batman Begins, that is one of the ballsiest scripts ever, mm-hmm. because they make the villain somebody we don't know. If you're asking a bunch of people to go see Batman Begins, you want to see the Joker, the Riddler, Two-Face, Penguin. That's what the casual Batman goer wants to see. And to make it whatever Liam Neeson's character is, I know you're going to know his name better than I do.
Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul. To make it him and Scarecrow is nuts to do that. Mm-hmm. But you're asking for so much faith and you just allow your story to kind of unfold the way it is. I think if Doctor Strange was on its own, almost like Deadpool was prior to entering into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think this original Doctor Strange movie could have been really, really, really good. I think it could have been really, really, really good. But I think it ultimately falls a little short because it is now what are we on? The 14th installment in what's going to be a 50 to 60 to 70 movie series. We don't know what the limit is. The limit might be nothing. Yeah. It might not exist. So they have to figure out how to make it so that it feels like a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, but then also make it feel like it's original and it can stand alone, but it really can't. And so, yeah, that's, I think I just summed up what I feel is wrong with Doctor Strange.
I almost feel like the movie doesn't delve enough into the mysticism of it all. And I feel like a lot of that came from a fear of being deemed racist.
Yeah, I mean, you do have also, what is Tilda Swinton? Tilda Swinton's just the ancient one, but
I can see that. The ancient one in the comics is exactly what you would expect someone named the ancient one in Nepal to be called. Or to be, right? Like, it's that stereotypical racist, like, wise ancient mentor character. And they specifically made Tilda Swinton's character Celtic in order to avoid that stereotype. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, just doing a character justice instead.
Yeah.
And, like, not presenting it in a racist way. They just decided to avoid it, which was actually a big point of contention when this movie came out. Uh-huh. A lot of people were really upset about that. But, like, you also have an excuse to put Tilda Swinton in your movie. You're not really going to complain about it, right? Again, like, the cast for this movie is ridiculous.
I do feel like Tilda Swinton's a little polarizing, though. Isn't she? Maybe she wasn't in 2016, but I feel like Tilda Swinton's a pretty polarizing.
She might be, but, like, I'm pretty sure
she most just takes on such weird roles, man.
Yeah, but she always does such a good job in them.
Yeah. I guess that's fair. Right?
Like that's what it comes down to is, yeah, she does weird roles, but she's like so good in them. And again, you have Benedict Cumberbatch. And this was like the height of Sherlock, if I recall correctly, was when he was cast as Doctor Strange. Rachel McAdams has always kind of been like that, like someone people kind of flock to. Chiwetel Ejiofor has already done 12 Years a Slave at this point. Mads Mikkelsen, yeah, again. Like, this cast is so good. And a lot of them are just wasted.
Yeah, I'm like, looking at what Benedict Wong was in. Benedict Wong was in The Martian literally the year before.
Yeah, he was also in Sunshine, which is like one of the most underrated science fiction movies ever.
He was in Arrival, wasn't he? Am I thinking of the wrong person?
I think so.
Annihilation. Yeah. That's right. Annihilation. Annihilation. He's the one who's interrogating Natalie Portman the entire time, but that is right after this. So
But like this cast is really strong, but you don't do anything with your side characters. We have, I am going to give you a bit of a spoiler here. We have a post-credit scene in this movie that has still not paid off.
Which is the stone thing?
The Chiwetel Ejiofor.
It still hasn't paid off.
It still has not paid off.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Probably because Chiwetel Ejiofor doesn't want to come back to the MCU. But
it's funny you say that, because even when that happened, I said to I was like, why did they just end with that? I don't get it.
It also makes no sense as a post-credit scene.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. So it's funny that it hasn't paid off yet, because people are still wondering, why did they end with that? And I think maybe the MCU is wondering the same thing.
Yeah, maybe. But this movie, there's a lot of potential in this movie, and a lot of it, I think, is just like it introduces a very different aspect of this universe that we haven't seen before in any of the preceding MCU movies. It should give us a lot of questions, but it just gets bogged down by everything being presented in CGI. Even when we look at like the training sequences in this movie, it's everyone making pretty lights. And, like, we're never explained what the purpose of said pretty lights are.
Yeah, it's just to walk through. You, like, make, like, a black hole almost.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I put this as, like, the 7th or 8th in my MCU rankings right now. I think it's, like, right above Guardians of the Galaxy at the moment.
There, I'll tell you right now where it'll rank in mine. So I'm at 13 movies. This will go, let's see, Doctor Strange. Where do I want to put you? You will go... Oh, it's my first 2-star. So very conveniently at number 10.
There you go. That's actually really low. I'm kind of surprised it's that low for you.
Well, but I mean, I have Ant-Man, Iron Man 3, Thor, and Iron Man 2 all with 2.5 stars.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, so it was my first 2-star. And I'm telling you, the CGI just started... It started to give me a headache. I shouldn't be getting a headache when I watch a movie.
Yeah, that's fair. The CGI gets worse as we go.
Thanks, man. I know I've just heard that in the new phase, it's really rough.
Oh, it's bad.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Bad. Well, it's because Disney doesn't pay their CGI people at all, but that's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard. I'm not looking forward to that. You have anything else you want to talk about with this one? Or because I really don't have anything else, because really what I got from this movie was CGI hurts head. Story pretty good. That's really what I got. Benedict Cumberbatch, good acting. You know,
yeah, I mean, this is all about the time stone. But like, we're at a point now where it's very clear the Infinity Stones are the most important things in these Marvel movies. They're leading to something.
Yeah, they're getting there. Exciting time on the horizon.
Several years.
So what are we doing next week? Next week, we'll be back on Wednesday, right? You don't got anything going on?
Yep. Good. That's correct.
Yep. You haven't lied to me. So next week we are doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And I guess Priscilla, right?
Yeah, I mean, Priscilla's kind of the only thing opening this weekend. It's Sofia Coppola, so it's probably going to be one of the most polarizing movies of the year.
That's what she does, man. That's all she makes. It's A24, though. I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
there's really nothing else that I would want to
The big ones start coming out the week after.
But not theatrically. Well, the Marvels comes out theatrically that week. But that's when you're talking. That's when
That's the wide release of the killer. That's the wide release of the holdovers. Like, yeah. We start getting into, like, movies. Or, like, we start getting into the films at that point.
And then November 17th, we get Thanksgiving and The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
But it's a good thing The Killer and The Holdover both open next week.
Well, so my holdovers, it looks like I'm not going to get the wide release here in America in the U.S. until November 22nd.
That's so long.
Which is the same time as Napoleon and Wish.
I know. What a week that is.
Now that's Thanksgiving, so that makes sense. Yeah. That's what they do. All right, well, anyway, so Priscilla and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's next week. We're going to be back on Wednesday night, hopefully a little bit earlier than we were tonight.
Hopefully, but,
You never can tell what's going to happen with the other show. But anyway, that's it, John. Thanks. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed this podcast, even though we really didn't say many positive things about either movie. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back next week with those other two movies and hopefully a little bit more positivity. Uh-oh. Corwin Green, Guardians Volume 2, a film known for...